Well, hi again. It's been only a few days since we last spoke here on my, I was going to say weekly podcast soundtrack, and but at the minute we're giving you an episode pretty much every third day. Thus is the way that there are so many great things to talk about at the minute. I hope you're enjoying the episodes. It'd be really nice if you did feel like giving us, I don't know, your thoughts, your feedback, guest suggestions, all that kind of stuff. Please do get in touch with us. info@edithbowman.com is our it's our email address if you want to get in touch about anything. So we'd love to hear from you with regards to, I don't know whether you've watched some of the films that we've talked about over the last couple of weeks. Maybe you went to the cinema to watch Jodie's film, The End We Start From. Maybe you've seen The Boys in the Boat, Priscilla, The Holdovers. Or maybe over the weekend you watched The Kitchen with today's guest. The last time we had today's guest on the podcast, he was up for an EE BAFTA Rising Star Award, which he duly won. Of course he did. How far Daniel Kaluuya has come since then. Although, to be fair, he was pretty much a superstar by that point already. Joining me today, though, to discuss his debut as a writer-director on The Kitchen. Music for the film is provided by Labyrinth and Alex Baranowski, to whom we owe huge gratitude for providing us with as yet unreleased cues of a Sunday morning. Alex, you absolute legend. When, you know, other people would normally be reading the papers and eating croissants, we can't thank you enough, Alex. And we'll begin with one of their cues, Can I Stay?
Going on.
Yeah.
You all right?
How you doing, mate?
I'm all right. I'm good. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm so glad that I get to talk to you about your film that you've written and directed. I felt so chuffed I got to see it at the closing night London Film Festival. And it felt so right. It felt just the perfect launch pad for this next chapter for you as a storyteller. I know we don't know each other that well, but I was so proud of you kind of just going, yes, Daniel, it was brilliant.
No, I appreciate it. It was so good to have you there. I remember seeing you after.
Oh, yeah, it's like that.
Good energy stuff.
Yeah. How does it feel, though? You know, this has been, from what I've read and stuff, this is a story and a kind of thing you've had kind of in you for a long time. And finally, it's, you know, people are getting the chance to see it. How does that kind of feel, this sort of different unleashing of a project for you?
I'm really looking forward to Let It Go. Do you know what I mean? And like allow others to take it as their own and take it for whatever they want. I give me and Kibwe, co-director, give all that we could to this. And like we just like, it's done. You know what I mean? It's like it's kind of like I'm a bit like kind of like I thought like, I'd be like, oh, but it's just peace. You know what I mean? It's a little bit of peace.
Yeah. Where did the journey start then for you with this? When did the idea start? And what was that journey for you in terms of kind of writing it? And making those decisions that you were going to take on those roles throughout the project?
So the journey started, like, I had the idea in a barbershop. This guy was talking about Smash and Grab, doing £1 million heist in a minute. And I was like, I want to watch that film. I was just like, I want to watch that. Then I did some more research, found out they were getting paid £200 to do it. I was like, who robs £1 million for £200? What's going on there? And then, so then I was like, all right, cool. Then I found it so interesting about, I think it said a lot about London, said a lot about class, said a lot about inequality, said a lot about desperation. You're risking freedom and death for £200. And so, yeah, we just dug it more. Then I did this film called Jonah, short film called Jonah with Kibwe, pitched it to him there. And he was like, oh, yeah, nice. It sounds interesting. And then a lot of time went by and he was like, he came back to me about it. And then me, Kibwe and the producer, I was just saying to them, listen, we can't do this whole like, because I wrote Skins as 18, 19. And I was doing all these, like, everyone wanted to meet me because I was writer, this young writer, like, doing this thing, and they wanted me to write young people. But I was just taking loads of coffees. I was just drinking loads of coffees, loads of water, and I wasn't doing anything. I wasn't writing anything. I was like, this is bullshit. Like, what's going on? Like I want to make stuff. Like, I come from a stock and cloth where we just make things. We don't be like,
yeah.
So I was still making YouTube sketches. So I just said to them guys, I was like, yo, like, let's just make something. So we put £200 each and shot it in a barbershop that I heard the idea. And it was basically Reservoir Dogs in a barbershop. And then, yeah, and we did a taste on and we went to film 4 and said, this is what we want to make. And they saw the vision, they got it. And then kind of it started from there. But it was like a lot of stages, but a lot's happened over time. So where I positions and I've had to go like this, and then, like I think my career, I was writing it solely, like, and then my career went crazy. So then Joe Murtagh, the co-writer, came on board to do a pass to make sure things were moving whilst my life was changing,
Yeah.
then I had to come back on board in the pandemic and do more work. It's basically just been like a collective between me and Kid, where like we've both been doing it. It's been working in a way, in a sense that like where I come up, it was just like everyone does all the jobs. You don't. It doesn't matter what your role is. And
Yeah.
then, but then when you
It's
come in the
collaboration.
formulaic versions, this is what the positions are in terms
Yeah.
of the influence on the project.
I love Joe's work on Calm Horses. I thought that was an extraordinary film and a brilliant piece of work in terms of kind of how he writes people. Good set of eyes to have as a, you know, someone to kind
Yeah,
of.
he taps into humanity, which is really,
Yeah.
which is wanting, really important, as opposed to
Yeah.
just characters.
What kind of director are you? Because you've worked with some brilliant ones. You know, and I guess it's that thing of kind of watching. And I imagine you're that person where, because you are so multifaceted, you know, like you say, you started writing at a young age and making, and it's about working with these amazing, whether it be, you know, your Denis Villeneuves or Jordans and stuff, in terms of watching how they do things and going, that's the way I want to do it, or that's the way I don't want to do it. Have you been taking things on board as you've been on this journey as well, in terms of coming to this point?
Yeah, I think by osmosis, I think I've just taken stuff in, and if I've been changed by notes and I've been changed by conversations, or I've seen someone change someone's performance, a lot of it's how you delegate, how you communicate. I think I've been inspired by my whole career. It would be like
Yeah.
Steve McQueen, it would be like Ryan Coogler, it'd be Matt Lipsey, who did Psychoville. Like I've been inspired by so many great directors. Do you know what I mean? It's Adam
Yeah.
Smith, Skins, who directed the first thing that I ever wrote for screen, which was that this Skins, it was like a Skins short. So like the older guys would write like the main series, and then the young people would write like the internet shorts. So I wrote this one about Jal's brother in series one. And I remember I was at sixth form, like when it was getting shot, I was like, oh, this is nuts. Like
Amazing.
I'm in class and it's getting shot in Bristol. I'm like, this is nuts. And then by the way Adam works, I was just really inspired by him. Do you know what I mean? And like Paul Gaither was on it as well. So there was a lot of people that I've been come across on my journey that have really, Denis, like that I've been really just going, oh yeah, Jordan, give me some wise words. Like I did the Sundance Screenwriters Lab a month before I shot Get Out. So it's been a long journey. And but my style, I'm still figuring it out, but I do like communicating. I trust everyone. It's a collaboration. I want them to feel like they've owned it, and they've put their point of view. Do you know what I mean? You trust their intellect, trust their creativity, trust their know-how and the execution. And so they say, for example, one of the departments, like one of the actors, you do it two takes a certain kind of way, and the last take, oh, what would you think? Go on and do what you think. Tell me that you most of the time would use that body and that shape because they
Yeah.
feel fresh. And same with the VFX department. You want what you want, but at the end of the day, you're the expert. So what do you think? And it's like, come, let's have a dialogue. Like, this is how we want to feel, like Elephant and Castle Shopping Center. But how do we
Yeah.
execute that? How do we make that cinematic? How do you mean? It's like, I thought that's what's been really exciting, is genuine collaboration. Is that's what I've fell in love with this game,
The
really.
film was brilliant. I loved so much about it. I loved the performances are brilliant, you know, and I feel like you've given Kane an opportunity to kind of really blow us away in terms of, I mean, he's brilliant in Top Boy, but this is something different in terms of this is a different ask of him. And I just feel like he was absolutely kind of rose to the challenge that you gave him. And little Jedi as well as Benji. I mean, bloody hell, what a find. He's phenomenal, literally breaks your heart. Like, and the production design on it, the sound, the score and the needle drop, I mean, all of it. It's just you're immersed in the world kind of completely. And I love that whole the opening cue that you've got, and the idea that as we come into the film and you've got those kind of few setups, so you know you've got Kane in that environment, and then the kind of the raids kind of going on as well. So you're getting an idea of the kind of the landscape of this world that we're about to enter. And it's amazing in terms of like how you've created this whole world, but it's familiar, but it's not in a way. There are no questions in what I just said. That was just me
Yeah,
spouting.
no, great. I appreciate it. I'm listening in. Like, it's weird because like now what's happening is I'm getting like really smart people having their opinion. I'm like, I find out more because a lot of time you're just going off instincts and you're doing what you're doing, and then you're like, oh yeah, no, it is that. It is that. That's but it is what we was aiming for. We wanted to take people into another place, but feel like you know this place. We wanted people to fall in love with the kitchen, you
Yeah, you
know?
want to be there. You want to help save it. That's the thing. It's such a character in the film. I've got to mention Ian Wright as well. For my husband's birthday at Christmas, my 10-year-old, we spent weeks online trying to get a signed Ian Wright shirt for Tom for Christmas, and we managed to get one. This thing arrived. We've not got walls big enough to put this thing on. It came like framed with like loads of old pictures of Wright Ian, the signed shirt and stuff. And anyway, it was absolutely brilliant. And I'm so excited for Tom to see the film because he's such a big gooner. But he's brilliant in it. And the character that he plays, though, as well. Were you writing with people in mind for this, both kind of like Kane and Ian and stuff as well? Or how did that kind of come about with those two particular choices?
It just wasn't, it wasn't, no, we didn't write in mind, but they did bring a lot to it. They're just interesting people. And we wanted to make the most of that. Like, I'm very much a firm believer, like, I write something, and I go, all right, cool, that's the cut of the suit, but we need to tailor it to you. So there's like, in order for it to really feel like, you know, you're in it. I mean,
Yeah.
look like you're walking around, that's a suit, that's your suit. So then that's what I'm saying, this is your character. Yeah, this is a sketch. You're bringing this to life. And so a lot of it, a lot of conversation with Kane, you know what I mean? And a lot of back and forth. I said, I'll hear him if a line doesn't make sense in his mouth, bro, change it. But I'm from an improv background, so I'm not really that precious. I'm like, whatever's best. And same with Ian, it's like kind of like he'd never acted before. So he's like, he won it, but he has such an emotion to him. He's such a heart to him, such a humanity to him. And we was actually surprised at how much we got, you know what I'm saying? And how much he was able to go there. But he was remembering how much South London has changed. He wasn't remembering how many people have moved from his area, how many people left, how the breakdown of the community. He did really tap into that in order to kind of portray certain moments of Lord Kitchener. But also he was the life of the kitchen. He was bringing the life to it. He's bringing the joy in it. And I mean, I can't say what happens, but like
Yeah.
he has a massive presence, you know what I
Yeah.
mean? But he always had a massive presence. He just happened to be a great footballer.
I in my head I have this romantic notion that whilst you're filming it, he's actually like DJing, you know, in between takes and stuff, and he's kind of like he's got this whole vibe going and stuff because
No,
he's
we did
so
that. I did that. There was takes. I was like, just keep going, yeah. And I would play
I know.
different songs. And then at one time, was it, what's the song? I think the song that was used. No, it was Christa Berg, Lady in Red. And I just played that over the thing. And he was like, yes. And a lot of the things are going, yeah, it was like Christa Berg, Lady in Red. I'm going crazy for it. It was funny. It was sick.
How did you navigate that though, in terms of did you get loads of stuff cleared in advance?
4,000% didn't get a lot of stuff cleared in advance. What we did is basically, we was like, this is what we want, and then seeing what would work out. But we just knew the vibe. We knew what the vibe, for me, it had to feel. I think music is such a big thing in London. Like, and it's so eclectic. It's so many genres. Even in like a underground club, there's going to be so many genres within that underground club. So we
Yeah.
just wanted for it to express that. The only song that was definitely had to be there was Candy, Cameo Candy. That's the one that was definitely locked in from the beginning. But that was connected to the dance. But even
Yeah.
that was connected to, how do you cinematically show the community, the kitchen as together? And for me, it's when you do Candy. You know what I mean? It's like at a wedding or at the end of a club when a DJ wants to kick you out, like everyone does that dance. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's triggering. You know what I mean? And I think then people then fall in love with it. But also you have this little boy who wants something in the middle of it. Do you know what I'm saying? And that's why it transforms and it evolves into something. Because it's like, and then the lyrics are more poignant. And you
Yeah.
actually listen to it, even when you want well, oh, tastes like you mean he wants, you mean he wants him, but he doesn't think that he wants him back. But then this is happening within this community, so it's like the dance is reflective of what the dance that Izzy and Benji are doing.
Nice stuck was like that kind of piece of music, because the kind of personal connection it's got clearly to you, but to so many people, is that it makes it timeless, you know, because it transcends generations. Mm-hmm. It's not one generation's song.
No. In this process, is what I really had to learn as a writer and a storyteller, is like how to not lean on like recent cultural references in order to make timeless work. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes like you can just go, oh, like I'm going to say a joke about this and it will trigger people, but in 10 years' time, it won't. You know what I mean? And I've seen that in a lot of films. I go, oh, I don't understand what they're saying. It was, even though I have the information, if I go on a Wikipedia page, I didn't live in context to understand what they're talking about, to really understand the dynamic of the joke. Yeah. And I didn't want that for this. I wanted, especially now we're doing in the near future, not now, I wanted it to be timeless to a level. But it's like, what British features, what London features are timeless? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And it does really think about that and really make those decisions from that place, which took a while. And it was a tough task, but I feel like the stuff that is in it is what makes people feel things.
When I was kind of watching and my kind of crap notes of trying and like write things down as I was kind of watching and stuff as well. And there's the Billy McLean Walk Away track, the lamp scene, as I wrote down badly. But I love that. I love that whole moment of their relationship with that song, you know, in terms of they're in the apartment and they're in the barbershop and stuff and all that kind of stuff. And it's beautifully used, you know, this one needle drop across different scenes. It's not just used in one kind of context. We kind of, we're placed, then we're taken out and we're brought back. And it's almost a beautiful companion to the narrative and the emotion that these characters are going through.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. No, it's the day the story's about like men who can't talk. And so a lot of the times they speak through other languages, and music's a big language that people speak through, men speak through. And so the lyrics of it and the mood of the sweetness of it is a sweetness that Izzy is unable to express. And he hasn't really experienced, he hasn't really received, so he's not able to give it. But it's around him, and he wants to go towards it. So that's what it kind of wants to represent. Whenever we tried anything else, it was like, no, this is it. Like, this is that song. And then also the bittersweetness of it.
Yeah.
Is that the actual melody of it is sweet, but the lyrics are not.
Yeah.
And so that kind of thing where, like, it was very, very much wanting to reflect Izzy's psyche, but also kind of show his descent of, like, his conflict. I don't want connection. I don't want community. I don't want family. But here I am, like, realizing I need this.
Yeah, because it makes it even more kind of like, you're like, no, when you see what happens, where he goes next. And you're like, what are you doing? You're so broken as a viewer, because you see him drop his guard and you see him smile and laugh with this little boy in a way that we've never seen him. You know what I mean? Like, lose those kind of barriers that he's constantly got up for just those couple of moments when they're laughing about the lamp, and it's kind of like, oh, and then it's like, oh, it's heartbreaking.
It's not that I don't love you. You know how much I do. And it's not that I found somebody take the place of you, but it's just the feel within me when you touch my hand, and the fear that shakes my body, and I don't understand, so I'm leaving.
Labyrinth and Alex, then, in terms of kind of working on score, I mean, Labyrinth's work in terms of, you know, I love playing when I was on Radio 1 playing Labyrinth when he sort of first came through, and then out DJing and stuff like that. And just so impressed by what he's doing with his music on screen, whether it be, you know, I love that Malcolm and Marie film that he did, and Euphoria as well. I thought they were fantastic. But with this as well, it's so kind of subtle, but really powerful. There's where he says, do you want a ride or not? the little voice in the cue and the piece of score that's in that bit. It's really tender and kind, and it's almost like being sat next to somebody watching the film and them kind of going, "Oh, did you see that?" Or it's really kind of physically effective, I think, the score in the film.
Lab's got so much soul to him. Someone I've been a fan of for a very, very long time, since like Pass Out days. I just knew that, like, what is going on here? Like, he's on another planet. You know what I mean? It's like these sounds. I'm like, what is going on? And when I saw him doing Euphoria, I was like, oh, I think he's Andrew Lloyd Webber, personally. That's just my opinion. But like, I just think that he has a soul to him and has a depth to him that he's able to just communicate. I remember when he watched a film one time, he came to my house, he watched a film. He's a hard man to track down, Lab. But he came down and then he just sent me a song like the next day, next morning. Like, just like, yeah, this is how it made me feel. And it was so accurate, it was so poignant. It was a cut and it was like, it's what I feel. And it was so like, kind of like, oh wow, he really tapped into the emotion. And then one time he came into the edit and he just started playing. And then like, he started playing. So a lot of the piano stuff was just, it's just him freestyling. It's just him freestyling to what he's seeing. And a lot of stuff, we just use that unedited. The end of the film is an unedited Labyrinth just freestyle, just him just going off on one. And it was just because it just felt like so raw and so honest, so like rough and so tender. And it was just that kind of like, but in this moment when the world's like kind of going crazy around them, but they're having this moment. And it was just so, he just is able to communicate the inner realities of the characters. Just effortlessly. So yeah, and a lot of even the Staples theme, and Alex did amazing work on that as well, like making that like big, because I just wanted it to be big. I always tell him like, it's Star Wars, bro. But what I realized, a 12-year-old, if you go into another estate that's got this legend and it's got this kind of like name to it, it is another world to them. It's like, oh my God, I'm about to play with the big boys. Really be true to what was happening within Benji's mind, that's what it feels like. It feels like, Jermaine is like, but it's also, I feel like it was really important in this film to show the tenderness and have black characters as gentle. And like, I feel like the scene when Benji goes into the gang's lair for the first time and is sleeping, it's like a lullaby. What I really wanted was basically going, he's an orphan. And not only that, all these kids have no one. There's a danger, there's an anxiety to it, but there's a kind of like a tenderness to it. There's a gentleness to it. when basically this older guy saying, "Yo, I help you out," and you're gonna say yes because you have nowhere else to go. And the harshness of that, and having to go, "Yo," like he's going on his journey because he misses his mum, and he can't stay in that place where his mum is because it reminds him too much, and he's not even aware of that. He just
Yeah.
runs. For me, Labyrinth and Alex really got across the complexities and the depth and the nuances of what the characters were going through, which I feel like have been flattened in other narratives about this world.
Talking about that piano and him just reacting to stuff. I don't know. Have you seen American Symphony, the John Batiste film?
No, I haven't yet.
Oh my God, it's extraordinary. And it's one of the things in that documentary is, he's writing this symphony that he's got to play at Carnegie Hall. It's his American Symphony. As this is happening, his wife is going through her second experience of cancer. It's crazy how these two things are running parallel. But he talks about, he can't really describe how he writes. It just kind of comes out of him, like he reacts to an emotion or a feeling. And you see him, there's a moment where he's filmed and it's kind of like it's just coming out of him. And it sounds so similar to how Labyrinth works and how that
Oh,
reaction
no.
to.
He's, I think me and him, like I think we understand that these ideas aren't ours. We're listening to a radio station and we're just basically bringing it to here. You go, you hear something, all right, cool. But you're bringing it there. It's not how can you generate it? Like, it don't even matter. It's just, it exists. It's just some people can see things and some people can't because of their experience and what they've learned across life. And Labyrinth has that musically. He just knows how to kind of like just download and just kind of, oh, boom, here. Yeah, and can hear the music that is happening in a conversation. We're chilling, and we just hears the music that's happening. It was a really great experience.
Where did you find Jediah? Because I'm so excited to watch him and see where he goes and what he does. Because his kind of presence on screen is kind of stops you from breathing sometimes. You're kind of like, you don't realize you've not taken a breath.
No, this is his first acting role. His aunt saw the ad for the audition, told him to go on the tape, but he went on tape. And then, like, out of all the kids, he just had it. He just had it. He's charismatic. He's cheeky. He's funny. He's got it. But also, what surprised us on set is how his emotional depth, how much soul he has to him, and also even craft-wise, how he was able to tap into his friend's pain, like his friend's lost his mum, and transfer that into the character. It's really complex stuff that he's doing at a very young age. And yeah, he just had an audition, and he just got good ideas as well. He was just like, there was a scene I wrote, and he had an opinion. And I was like, he said a 13-year-old wouldn't do that. I'm like, you're right. Do you know what I mean? It's like, we changed the scene. He's sharp and he's on it. He's real. Everything's happening is real. And it was a joy to watch him grow as well on set as well.
Did you try and kind of keep him and Kane sort of apart a bit, or in terms of that relationship, it's almost kind of like, I don't know, being too familiar with each other whilst you were shooting and stuff to kind of keep that sort of two-way thing that's constantly shifting throughout the film.
I think Kane kept his distance at the beginning. He kept his distance because he wanted his. But it's like, luckily, it happened like the film kind of like, the more they got to know each other, the more we did the later scenes. So it was actually happening organically that they were able to build his bond. And also, a bit like Jediah got more relaxed because he's like on set, everyone's there, he's filming. He's like, ah. So he was able to kind of relax with them. But they did a bonding session at the beginning of the shoot to get to know each other. But it was kind of good at the beginning, like they just Kane is of well is he's avoidant. It was good at the beginning that he didn't really engage with Jediah as much. But yeah, they grew over the course of the film.
Was there a part of directing this that you enjoyed the most?
Edit was fun. Edit's fun. Edit's fun. Edit's fun because you're kind of like, every day you have a problem, or a couple of problems, or all the problems. And then you're like, all right, cool, how do we fix this? And you're just with a like team of people every day, showing up. All right, cool, these are the problems. All right, cool. And then you get closer and you're getting closer and you're getting closer. Just continuous thought, and just getting a routine and a pattern and and just trying to solve things. All right, how are we going to do this? How are we do that? How do we get this across? And also just the conversations that you're having in those spaces. Just really concentrated. It's like pure storytelling. I mean, Christian Sandino Taylor did an amazing job on this. His ideas and what he gave to the film is I'm forever grateful to him. Mm. And Amy Beattie, the story editor, who did amazing as well in kind of really shaping scenes and back going back and forth and doing work. We kind of was like really, really, really in it. He was in it. But I've just enjoyed. I enjoyed that part of it.
Have you got the next one lined up ready?
Next what? Next film
you're going to direct? No! No! The next film, the next director.
Hey, I'll let this come out, man. Edith, I'm knackered. I've got ideas. I've always got ideas. I've got things sitting on my laptop. But for me, it was really important to finish this. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And like, boom, get it done. And then like, yeah, maybe. But I've always been like, what does the idea want from me? Could be want me to act in it. Could be want me just to write in it. Could be want to direct. I don't like, it's whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not really, it's about how do I get something that doesn't exist to exist? And who are the people that you want to build that with? That's really it. Like, I don't really think of it in like strategy terms. I mean, I'm probably in denial about how like being a director, and I've had too many opinions on set, to be honest, when I'm act. So like, it was always a natural step where I'm at right now. So. But yeah, no, I don't have the next one planned. I've got ideas, but we'll see how this plays out.
I also, just before we run out of time, bloody love Hobie and Spider-Man as well, Across Spider-Verse and Beyond next as well. Top work, mate. So great.
Yeah, fun.
It's great. Bonkers how they do that. You're like, how? How do they do that? It's just nuts, but it's entertaining.
It was so. You know what it is? It's like, it's really helped me because like I watched a cut of it whilst I was in the edit for Kitchen, and it was so inspiring because it wasn't finished. It was like really thinking, really, some drawing was a bit scratched and this is that and the other. And I was like, oh, wow. And just understanding their process and seeing it bare. And then like 2 weeks later, they showed me another cut and they moved so far. And I'm like, these guys, it was just so inspiring to watch them work. Kemp, Phil, Chris, all the whole team. And just really, really inspired me to like create hope and drill in more.
It's such a unique and brilliant beast. We watch it over and over again in our house. It's brilliant. Listen, Daniel, it's so great to chat to you, and huge congratulations again. You've made something really, really brilliant, and it's really connected as well. It's lovely as well hearing you get the chance to talk to you about the collaboration as well with those, you know, with the music side of it as well. So thanks for your time, mate, and congratulations.
I appreciate that, Edith, man. Appreciate you watching and appreciate the love.
Score to the Kitchen, that's Your Save by Alex Baranowski and Labyrinth, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking with Daniel Kaluuya. Huge thanks to Daniel for taking the time to talk to me about the music in his first feature film as a writer and director. And you can watch The Kitchen on Netflix right now, and it goes without saying it's something well worth doing. Thanks once again to Alex for helping us out with the music. We will be sure to get him on the podcast very, very soon because he is a man in high demand. EdithBowman.com is the place to go if you want to hear Daniel's previous appearance on the podcast, which also featured, get this, Florence Pugh, Timothy Chalamet, Tessa Thompson, and Josh O'Connor. Be Still, My Beating Heart. The most wonderful collection of talent who have gone on to enormous and brilliant and inspiring things. Follow us on socials. We are at Soundtracking UK, and please have a look at our YouTube channel, Soundtracking Extra, and subscribe if you get a chance. We'll be putting Daniel up there. We've got some exclusives as well from me and McKenna Bruce. We've got the producer and director of the new Netflix show Griselda going up there this week. And then next up, joining us to discuss his debut feature film is director Jamie Childs, along with his composer James Drummond. The film's called Jackdaw. It's set in the northeast of England. It's got a great cast, including Jenna Coleman, Tommy Turgoose, Oliver Jackson Cohen, and it is out in cinemas this coming Friday, the 26th of January. So ahead of Jamie and James joining us, check out the film when it comes out on Friday in cinemas, and we will be dropping a new episode of the podcast this coming Friday. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.